past 2 days, very sunny west coast of Sweden. And I am the editor of the Red Ice website, and I will be your host for the following hour. And I am very glad that you have tuned in today and are here with us, because we have a very special guest joining us today, Christopher Morse from creativecosmos.org will be joining us. And if you have been following my site, the Red Ice website, you'll certainly be familiar with his writings. I have been posting his wonderful articles for quite a while now on my site, so I'll bet you are familiar with that. And Christopher is not only a writer, he's also a great musician and a very talented artist. He has he's the author of two books, the Pearly Gates Press, two volumes actually. So, and he also has two different radio shows right here on bbsradio.com. And one of those is called Creative Cosmos, and that's live on Fridays at 7 p.m. Pacific time for all of you who want to tune into that. That's live on Fridays at 7 p.m. And he also has another show called Transcendence World Movement, and that's on Mondays at 6 p.m. That's also Pacific time, of course. So be sure to join the creative cosmos of Christopher Morse, and he's just one of the most creative people I know. So be sure to check that out, and also, of course, his site, creativecosmos.org, a wonderful source full with, you know, music, imagery, and prints, and, of course, his wonderful writing. So do check that out. And I also want to say, before we bring Christopher on here, that if you have enjoyed any of the previous Red Ice radio shows, the first person you'd want to thank is Christopher, who has been incredibly kind and helpful to help to set up this show. Of course, Don and Doug, who pulls the strings here at BBS Radio, is of course the one who makes it all possible. But without Chris, this show wouldn't be a possibility. So I would like to thank you so much, Chris, and also at the same time welcome you to the show, my friend. Hi.
Hi, here I am on the show, Red Ice Radio. Glad to be here.
Great to have you here, Chris. It's good to talk to you again.
Nice warm up there.
Yeah, sure.
That about covers it, doesn't it? Sounds like I'm pretty busy these days.
Yeah, you are. You are incredibly busy. That's why I'm so, you know, fortunate to have you on the show here today. So thank you for taking the time to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I listen to it every week, and it's interesting to follow a show along and then be on it. It's like you're participating in what you've been listening to.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. And for all of you who are familiar with it, myself and Chris, we did a show together on Creative Cosmos Radio Show around Christmas last year. So it's very excited to finally have you on my show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing another show, that same show, the second annual Red Ice Christmas later this year.
Absolutely. Okay, to get things going here, for those who are new to this program and maybe new to this site also, why don't you begin to, if you will, talk a little bit about yourself and maybe some of the background and how you come to start the Creative Cosmos website.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely happened over a period of time, you know. I started out going to basically the university systems. I spent 9 years at three different universities studying music the whole time, and I was played a lot of trumpet and learned a lot of different instruments and listened to all the music of Western culture, right, from chant. It usually starts historically around 1200, and you can watch how chant evolved into pretty much anything goes these days, and that's kind of the beauty of life these days, is things can really be freed up if you are open to them being freed up. And so I was coming from a very studious position there for a while, very philosophical and studying Western music, Western art. And eventually along the way, I started feeling discontent with the direction I was heading in because, you know, for a variety of factors, it was largely the result of just how my life circumstantially evolved, and I was feeling that a part of myself wasn't being expressed, and that I was feeling this compression that I can see in others when they feel the same thing that I did then, this compression. And I met right about that time, kind of along with the saying, when the student's ready, the master will come. I met some people who turned me on to some of the Eastern Way, and it totally changed the direction of my life. I stopped all the habits and all the previous impetus and looked at everything anew and went through my whole consciousness trying to shine light on every hidden corner and to discover everything there was to know about myself. And then after doing that, I had to then embark upon my own journey in life and create the life situation that was in accord with what I was now feeling inside. And so I started experimenting. You know, I moved to Minneapolis. I leapt out of the university life, just short of getting a doctorate in performance and conducting. And just started exploring once I got to Minneapolis through song and through pictures and through words, and started to see that I couldn't be limited in my expression, that I needed to let the expression go where it wanted to go, and the creative cosmos emerged from those explorations.
Oh, amazing. And that's, I think that's a great story, you know, because as you said, you have a background. I can sense that in your writing, that you have a background in Western philosophy, and I think that, you know, as I said, one of your mission statements is to unite both the West and the East, and I think you're doing a great job at that, actually, and bringing these, you know, different mindsets together and merging them in a single comprehensible idea.
Well, thank you. I really feel, I mean, that was one thing I started to recognize, was that what I was feeling wasn't really expressed. There wasn't a context that existed for me, so I had to create my own backdrop to my own mission, so to speak. And I really saw that in art and music, and I talk about that, how meditation's moving in, and people are being transformed and living a freer, a healthier life. And it's reality. It's something that I truly believe that people simply need to be exposed to. And so I'm trying to throw it out there in as many ways possible.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's you're doing a great job, my friend, so keep it up, you know.
All right, I will. You too, man. I love your site. I visit your site every day. Always looking to see what the headlines are. And, you know, that was part of how our friendship was born, is that, you know, we kind of have a similar calling in what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And thank you for those kind words. And, you know, I try to, you know, fill it with content that is not only, you know, highlights the difficult parts of everything that is going on around us, but also, you know, the kind of information that is solution oriented and can see through the mundane everyday life, so to speak, and see the magic in the reality around us. And I think that you do this in your writing, and you I'm curious. I want to ask you how do you perform your writing? Do you just sit down and let the inspiration flow through you, or how does it work?
Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, it goes back to one of my teachers who introduced me to the Eastern Way. He was, there were really two people who introduced me to it, one of whose grandfather was a Zen master in Japan, and another who was a sannyasin of Osho. And they were both just being near them and observing them and talking with them and making music with them. I picked up the aesthetic, but one of the things the Zen person told me was to allow inspiration, to be open for inspiration and allow inspiration to come through on its own terms, more or less. So pretty much what I do all day long, and Osho covers this in his writing as well, how to catch the inspiration, how to open yourself. I mean, first of all, you have to totally be free of the mind, or you can't even begin the process because you'll be occupied with other things. And then you have to create a state of receptivity, openness, and I pretty much create that space where I'm open and waiting for anything that wants to express itself through me to come and ring my bell, and I'll do my best to serve it as it comes through. And sometimes it forms in my mind ahead of time. It's practically done before I even sit to write. It just starts pushing its way out because I have that state of the linkage. I never leave that space. I'm always open to it, and sometimes it'll just form. And then I get it out, which then creates the space for something new. So that's one way that it happens. And so I've described before how I see that the inspiration kind of shoots through my mind, anything that's in my mind, and can use anything that's in my mind that best expresses itself. So I have this kind of I'm just serving my role, I think, very well. I'm meeting it halfway, and allowing it to come through, but also consciously participating in refining it, sharpening it, making it clear with my own vision and intent. So it's kind of a union between source expression and those individual aspects of which I embody.
Yeah. And I think you have a beautiful image that when I look at it, I think it's an image of what you just described, and this is an image that is I put it up on the on my site today for this show. The links for this show is up on Red Ice, and this image is like it's a sun, and one of the rays from the sun is going to the back of the head of this fellow sitting at a computer. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and everyone who wants to see this can just head on over to either my site or of course Christopher's site, creativecosmos.org, and take a look at the prints that he got there, and you will find the one I'm talking about. And it's like, it's to me it says that the ideas are, as you describe, coming from the outside, but they are working through you, and then you are, putting them out, I guess, in this image, putting them out on the internet and spreading these ideas all over the world. And, it's a beautiful image.
I'm just bumping it out there. Yeah, it's. thank you. I like that one too. And when something like that, when you create something like that, because, I'm not necessarily sitting there preconceiving that or thinking that. I'll be sitting there, and then I'll have a realization or my connection, or suddenly I'll just. I mean, in the same way I described, but also in the artwork, you're. your hand will literally know what to do. You almost have to surrender to your hand because the hand knows what to do. Or I talk about this with the mind all the time, and people are always stressing the mind out. But if you can just keep an open channel and keep present awareness, the mind works beautifully any way you need it to, you know. And so yeah, sometimes a picture like that, it'll just start forming in my mind, and I'll draw it out, and I'll sit back, and I'll be like, just bask in it for a while, because it's just such a good feeling, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know to continue this theme, I know lately you've been writing a lot about different stars.
Yeah.
And like Vega and Sirius and Betelgeuse and Antares and Polaris and all of our friends up there, you know?
Yeah.
I know that last time we talked on your show, you asked me if I considered the sun to be alive, you know, a living entity.
Yeah.
And I guess that I would like to turn it around, ask it to you now, and maybe expand it a bit also, and ask you what is the sun, and what are the stars around us?
Well, you know, yeah, cool. I think... the more time goes by, and the more I'm kind of running away with that idea that, you know, it's not, when you're first examining it, you're thinking, well, what could it be? You know, when it dawns on you that the sun, we'll start with the sun or the stars, because they kind of would work the same way there, but that they have a consciousness or an energy, you know, that you can actually feel. I mean, even on the physical level, if you strip away all the assumptions and all that which we take for granted and consider that we're standing on the planet just in this kind of almost rubber suit here, and you can just open your arms wide to the sky and let the sun's light just beat down upon you, there's nothing in between you and the sun there, and your energy's totally interacting. And when you consider how much of the solar system the sun is, you know, to me, the sun is the creator of this solar system, and an embodiment of a higher type of being, like a fifth-dimensional being that no longer comes down into bodies necessarily, but those stars in themselves are a type of body. And we, being the human beings in the body, are capable of perceiving all kinds of levels. You just have to not be bound by the body or bound by limited concepts. If you can freshen your perspective, it makes absolute sense that we could not only enjoy the stars and have our energy fields interact with the stars, but that if we were aware enough and free enough of ourselves and of our context, not just in this body, but in all bodies, and association with life on Earth, and association with the solar system, and we are simply the stars ourselves, our own chakras shining in the sky. And then we, you know, and you got to take size out of it. You might think, wow, that star is huge, and we're just this small dude, but that is irrelevant in the consciousness, in the energy, in who we are beyond it all. So we're actually friends in outer space.
And and I think it was Michael Sarion who first highlighted a quote from so that I became aware of it. It was from Nietzsche, who said that as long as we think of the stars something outside of ourselves, we cannot. I think what he meant that, you know, we cannot let them show us the way, or, you know, I think it was playing on to, you know, the astrological theme, and as long as we see them as outside of ourselves, we're powerless to both interact with them and use them, so to speak, but we have to, just as you say, see them as a part of us and as a part of our creation and our experience.
Yeah, and however we see it is basically how our world will exist for us. So if we see it as a possibility, you know, that's one thing that I always encourage, too, that I try to demonstrate very openly what I'm doing so other people could also perhaps pick it up, kind of as a model. I'm not only am I putting forth in expression. I'm also modeling every second of the day what I'm talking about as well.
Yes, yes. And it's, you know, how I can connect this to, you know, you seem to be, you know, very, very connected to this and able to, you know, tap into the cosmic mind, so to speak. And is there anything for those out there who you know feel this that this is difficult to do and to reach out there? How, do you have any suggestions to how one can, you know, connect to this in a better way?
Yeah. Well, you know, it does always come back to the bottom line of meditation. You know, there's a lot to sort out in there. So if somebody really wanted to do this, see, it is quite a long ways from just the normal life in a body to where you're connecting to stars. And it is a very big gap there, you know.
Yeah.
That you, I mean, you could do it instantaneously, but the person's not going to really be convinced deep inside that it's possible.
Exactly.
You know, you almost have to get the person to the point of where they can accept it. And to accept that it's possible, you know, they need to see maybe lesser miracles along the way, just to use words in a descriptive sense, not in any kind of value judgment necessarily, but they'll have to have experience, you know, little openings, awakening, some kind of idea. They have to pop outside of themselves before it even comes into play. And on the last Creative Cosmos show, if someone wants to check it out on the archives, Secrets of the Galaxy, probably be up in a couple of weeks, I went really down the line of how one could link to, in a channeling sense, if you want to consider that word of people use channeling, you know, and how,
yeah.
How, okay, so all that what I said aside, you want to try it, all you have to do is kind of throw the intention out there. See, this is one of the tricks to use in the mind in a higher way. Like I said, we don't need to necessarily be concentrating or trying hard, because like what you said earlier, if someone thinks it's difficult, their concept that it's difficult is going to be the very obstacle to being able to have it occur.
Exactly, yes. So we need to, do we need to experience it, or, you know, how was it for you? Did you just, you know, read about it and then you were able to, you know, connect with this, or really feel this, that you were connecting with it, or did something, you know, happen that made a difference for you?
Well, yeah, I personally had a whole series of major revelations, like several, man, probably like 4 or 5 years that, you know, I was peeling off the layers, but also uncovering just massive amounts of energy that were just blowing me away again and again. And as soon as I would kind of get a grip, it would happen again. And I would just be, you know, not just like a small shift, but the fundamental changes. You know, you realize something deeper in your subconscious. You know, in the deeper layers, each thing fundamentally changes everything, the way you perceived everything always, because now you're seeing more. You're seeing, you know, and maybe somewhere you are always seeing it from that perspective, but you truly have to deprogram the mind, heal the emotions, and I have many events of that. And then once I was getting a good, you know, that work goes on always, but once you get some space from it, you can get some new things to come in, and I had past life after past life arrive, and I reassimilated them. Like, I practically lived them out for a year or 6 months or however long it came through. I would put the symbology around me. I would read something of that time. I would feel it in my heart, in my spirit, in my character. I'd embody it. And this is also what I've done in my own study of history, you know, even things that weren't past lives that I went through and kind of embodied. I experienced as if firsthand, and then allow it to pass through, to not form conclusions. So that's one point I come to all the time, is to not form conclusions, because rigid thinking shuts down the process.
Interesting. And so this is, you know, the life you're living now. Is this kind of, the summation of all these past lives? I mean, because this might or might not be, but it could be the life that is kind of, you know, where the first time becomes aware of all the previous ones. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I've made gestures at that before in a couple of different articles, but it's, you know, that's definitely a tricky thing to embody or to encode, but I feel that way, that I reassimilated all that came before and then re-embarked upon the soul's journey, you know, the whole soul's lifetime as the soul in full awareness moving forward and encountering life in that way. And that's what I believe is the integration. The word I always, you know, when we throw around dimension this, dimension that, you know, the fifth dimension to me is integration, where you are now whole and you've recovered those missing parts of your soul. Because not only do you have to find your past lives and burn them through, but there's also parts of yourself. All right, well, first starting this life, let's say you had a hurt that got frozen in time. Well, we can see that if we want to heal our life this time, we'll have to recover that and heal that. But also in past lives, we have hurts. So not only do we have to kind of cleanse our this life, we have to cleanse our past life, and we just kind of have to deal with it all through this. And that's where we come into acceptance and, surrendering to the universe, letting the universe just, it'll push it right through, you know,
yeah,
if we don't hold it down. And so, yeah, I think that what you said, I agree with totally, that I am moving forward on that. And then even recently I had another understanding that you can even get beyond that and even beyond the soul, because the soul, one quality of the soul is its many lives on Earth, but that's just associated with life on Earth. And if we also come from farther journeys out in space. So if we kind of also rise beyond the concept of soul at some point, then we're totally out of influence of all that occurred in the solar system, and we're truly at that point of which you referenced Nietzsche earlier, where we
yeah.
are outer space. We are inner space. We are space.
Yes. That is fascinating. And I had an interesting talk with my brother the other day there, and we talked about, you know, the connection between light and how you see light and how you replicate light inside of yourself, you know, because if you're looking at a candle, let's say, and you try to, or rather, when the photons hit your eye and goes back to the retina, I guess, and
uh-huh.
at one point, you know, the signal converts from the photons to the electrical signal or the impulse that the brain interprets.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the light actually never hits the parts inside of you, but still the light is inside of you. So it's kind of, it's very difficult to explain,
yeah.
I guess, but it plays on this theme that you just described, that the further out you go, the more into, you know, yourself you come eventually, and it's all, it goes round and round, I guess.
Yeah, I've definitely felt outer space inside, and myself, once you get beyond, you know, it's like what I said also in that fifth dimension, that integration. I also put where sometimes you see people described this I am presence, you know, because I am is the higher self, and here I am, you know. And then at some point, even the I am gets dispersed, you know, and your presence, it then can move without any limitation of center necessarily, you know. So first you got to integrate as a center, as a whole, and then at some point you've got to allow that to then release. That's the blooming of the lotus, when it releases and the particles just permeate existence itself.
Yeah. You know, to get to this point, as we talked about earlier here, we need to somehow let go of ourselves and let go of our experience that we are having here, because we have to, you know, you can live a life here and be, you know, totally involved in all the things that goes on around you, and you can almost, you know, be the problems that you see around you and be totally involved in those, or you can come to a point where you know try to just stop everything and freeze everything, and I guess this could come from many different ways, you know, because you can something could happen to you that that makes you come to this state, or you can if you just ask a lot of questions, and if you ask long enough, I guess you come up against this again, that this is an experience that you are having, and when you come to that point, you also, I guess, come to the point where you understand your ego a bit better, and you understand that you know your life previously through your awakening has this ego that basically has been taking care of your life up to this point.
Yeah.
And now maybe, I guess, that you need to, you know, we don't have to get rid of the ego, but you have to, you know when it hits you, so to speak, when it takes over. And is this something, you know, you could expand on, the concept of the ego, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why one of the reasons I always speak of being watchful, of being an observer, and not just the watcher from the body out, but from the being out, and seeing all your own emotions and thought patterns. And this is also where the concept, the Buddhist concept of non-doing comes in. You know, if someone really wants to change their life or really wants to get a handle on these things, the first thing they should do is just stop acting so much, be more watchful, and don't feel as if everything has to do with you. Kind of just back off of things a little bit. And then somewhere along the line, an inclination will hit. That ego will somehow... See, this is the trick. The ego always convinces you, always proves itself right, always has the perfect justification that this is exactly what is needed. And it's kind of... And it does. It comes upon people. You know, they could be pretty relaxed, and then all of a sudden... But see, that's set up in their psyche, is because they have yet to deal with certain things, or they have yet to release this or that, or, you know, fully become, shine the light on themselves. It's kind of a byproduct of not being conscious to allow that to just kind of take over. So really, again, we're at that threshold of how you see life, or getting over that closed-in perspective of just seeing life as one small set of circumstances for a short time with a handful of people. I mean, that's such a small perspective, and it's simply not the case, you know, that there are so many people in the world, and we do need to open up and speak freely, sing our song, and find, you know, and not... See, this is the thing about the ego, too, is it usually has, you know, an ambition or some kind of a... just a nasty edge to it that isn't in line with what your heart and your soul would really want to do. And the bummer is that it'll always give you, even if you got what the ego wanted, it would just want something else, because that which drives the ego wasn't dealt with. And also, if you would let go of that ego and go with the flow, your life would take a whole new and higher dimension. See, that's precisely, again and again, I try to bring it to that point, that crux where you could see that's exactly the point of view of where, or that's where you got to let go or jump or make the leap. You know, there's a certain amount of faith, and you got to conquer your fear to change your life and to truly take responsibility to move forward with the process. It isn't piece of cake. It isn't a cheap and easy thing. It isn't a small thing. You truly have to put it as a priority in your life and keep it under consideration all the time.
Yes, absolutely. So this is about awareness then, I guess, in some sense, and awareness of, you know, about yourself and who you are and what you are. And I know that you have been also writing a few articles on, you know, the basic, if we go back to the, you know, the rubber suit of the human body and take a look at, you know, our own DNA, for example. And that,
uh-huh.
It's a fascinating topic, of course, about in itself, but I know that you previously have been writing about, you know, DNA activation and, you know, how to make our bodies also part of this and not, you know, just feel like it's something that we need to, you know, get rid of or forget, but we actually can, you know, integrate our body in this experience also.
Oh yeah, very much so. Because
yeah.
Once you, well, let me just say, like, one thing I see is a correlation between our soul being and our latent DNA. And when I sometimes refer to activating DNA, the way I see that is, like, say you're reading this book that your curiosity and interest brought you to at this time, you know, that old thing of picking the right book at the right time, it'll leap off the shelf. And so then you pick it down, you read it, and then something in that triggers an awakening in you. You know, and then I say the correlation is that it's ringing that bell within your own structure, within your own, you know, DNA. You're set up to resonate with that truth, and it had yet to be awakened through exposure or through recognition. And here you are now in an open and conscious state, allowing yourself to go through material, which will then go inside and activate these parts of yourself that were always there, but they have not been manifested to the fore in this world as of yet.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a brilliant, you know, idea, and the concept is just well, it's fascinating to say at least, you know, because this system that we are part of, you know, it's well. What is that, you know, that makes the book leap out of the shelf, so to speak? And it feels like if you open up to, I don't like the word destiny, but, you know, if you open up to the endless possibilities out there and let the synchronicities begin, you know, they will begin to occur. And I guess especially if you are aware that synchronicity does exist.
Oh yeah, it totally does. You know, and that is one thing I think is making its way out to the broader consciousness. You know, thanks to, you know, several books like the Celestine Prophecy, or you know, some of these kind of radio shows like what we're talking about right now, and people just becoming aware of that. You know, and that's kind of the mystery. That's the beauty of existence, is that if you can open up to that, again, it's whether you can truly feel like that's possible, whether you can allow yourself to have that kind of a... Because then, as soon as you take that, as soon as you recognize synchronicity, you know, I don't need to ask what is it that's causing that. I simply smile and know that there is something out there. There's a play. There's a being, an entity, a vibe, or whatever you want to call it. But there's this clear intelligence, and sometimes the synchronicities may be profound, you know, such as someone stands out, and you go talk to them, and you follow through, and they have exactly what you need to match up something in your life. Or they can just be a joke. You know, you can see a couple numbers again and again, and you recognize it and be like, all right, I'm waiting for another one, and then you see it again, and it's just so strange or impossible for it to have been just meaningless. Of course it's meaning. It's demonstrated intelligence and meaning, and it does even have that playfulness. And that mystery, whatever it is, we don't need to reduce it even further. We just get to know it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if one is... I don't know, if you don't have to be smart enough to notice it. You just have to be open enough to notice it. And I guess that at one point you can almost, you know, surf the coincidences, so to speak, and you can just bump between these different points that you know, rushes your life forward in a new and fascinating direction, I guess.
Certainly, once we are aware of it, and because you can refine the language, you know. Myself, it's not synchronicity anymore. It's more of a, you know, there's been a deeper language of communication evolved, you know, so I can simply have intent and I'll get some kind of a response, bounce right back through. And, you know, once you get that, it's no longer even synchronicity once you're consciously doing it and going back and forth, and then it's not simply some strange symbolic meaning. See, this is, I think, we're kind of in a lot of our explorations here, we're moving to this next level, all of us that have been going through these phases and sharing the information, getting up to spec, so to speak, as a friend of mine likes to say. You know, now we're moving to that point of going even further. It's not just a symbolic representation, but a very intimate personal relationship with existence itself, with life itself.
Interesting. And yeah, because I was just going to ask, you know, is all this increasing at this time, you know, because sometimes it feels like it. I have difficulty sometimes, you know, thinking back, 3 years or 5 years or even, of course, 10 years, but it feels like something is on the rise, you know, and it's increasing.
Yeah, I definitely think there are a couple things at work there. You know, I think that the universe is, you know, our area of the universe, at least, is moving up to higher general vibrations. You know, I think it is moving from the head to the heart for people in general. But I also think there's another current of, like what you said, where once you become aware of this and you start opening to it, you can dive right in and go more and more and more into it and expand farther and farther and farther. You know, I don't think everybody's going to do that, but I think many will. You know, there will be a group that will just go all the way with it right away as soon as they get it, you know. So there's that faster current, and then there's like a more ebbing flow of just the wave of human evolution. But having some go through that higher will then establish that territory, so that then those who have ebbed to the next level can then have that pathway open whenever they're ready to go even yet further.
Yeah, and it's I always, if I get the opportunity, like to ask my guests about their thoughts on 2012, and you know, this date keeps popping up everywhere, and I always like to get the guests' views on this. So what do you say? Is this connected with 2012 in any way?
Oh yeah, I mean, you could look at it in the sense that, you know, of course I don't see it as necessarily a specific line of demarcation, but just kind of a place where we can hang our hat and see. All right, well, maybe around that time, we will have gone from the head to the heart. The condition will be more the vibration of the earth. And see, I also believe that the vibration of the earth is that heart frequency. So once the earth is less oppressed, so to speak, and that there's even less pressure from the subconsciousness of humanity upon the earth, and once that's popped a little bit, released a little bit, you know, I think that the overall level, probably right around that time, you could say is the shift of cycle. And, you know, if you want to say it, that's, you know, we're already heading to it. And like, as you said, some of us are full bore going for it already. And whatever we're experiencing, you know, it won't be any, there won't be anything further than that available. The truth of life is available now for all of us, you see.
Yeah.
But then that is, like I said, the more of the underground. Like I think eventually all of these ideas that we're talking about, they're so real, they're so clear, they're so unmistakable. They'll eventually, certain things will drift out into the culture as a whole, and the general outlook will shift to accepting and incorporating some of the ideas that have been kept in, maybe mystery schools through the ages. Some of this will be more open understanding, and people will have a broader perspective because, you know, partially the information age, you know, the internet and everything, and like say someone like yourself who studies all this, you know, you're summing up history. You're getting a view on the whole history. And, you know, there are many of us who are doing that. We scan through, we learn all the information there is, and that's all you can do. And it's over, you know. It's kind of like we're summing up human experience up to this point. And once we do that, on the collective, you know, even as I said earlier, earlier in the show, of where myself as an individual collected my past lives and moved forward, we as a society collect all of our past, assimilate it, heal it, transform it, and then move forward. And so then that's what I think is coming somewhere. We're in the influx of it now, and we're moving in that direction.
Absolutely. And talk about think, because that was the next point I was going to bring up, you know, the concept of the internet and how it does affect this transition and everything that is going on now. And I mean, the internet is like it's like a proof, you know, almost for this idea, or for this blueprint of creation that plays and unfolds itself before our eyes. And this is, you know, the final, to connect the global brain and all the people who are involved in this kind of information, and just to help to get it out there and to, you know, make this information just, you know, explode all over the globe. And it's fascinating, and it's just interesting that you touched upon it yourself here. So
yeah, we're doing it. We're getting that information out there and letting everybody just simply see what's there. See, you know, do what they will with it. And if you just dive in, play around, see what rings the bell, you know, it's all getting the knack, getting the feel, starting to allow the process itself. You got to trust that things are going to work out. And that's part of having support. You know, that's the Sangha part of the three gems is, you know, even myself or yourself, where someone will write you and say, hey, I'm going through this. Well, you can write them and transform their fears into joy. You know, it's not something to be afraid of. It's not a darkness for you. It's a potential joy. It's a blessing. It's the most wonderful thing in all of creation, and it's happening here and now, and it's happening to you. And oh boy, does that change the way they see it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And listen, Chris, we got just about 3 minutes left here.
Okay.
And I would like to, you know, briefly touch upon, you know, you've got two books out. Why don't you talk about those for a moment?
All right. Yeah, it's actually going to be three volumes. We're in the process eventually of doing Pearly Gates Press Volume 3. A few more things I'd like to let run their course. But yeah, Pearly Gates Press 1 was the first compilation we did of a lot of my writings, many of which had made their way around various internet sites at one time or another, some of which hadn't. And I kind of view the Pearly Gates Press as my vision of the astral plane, you know, or also it's like when you're describing these this phenomenon and the transformation, it isn't like there's a specific place to start. You just have to throw it all out there, you know, and just keep putting it out there, and you sort your way through it, you know. And Pearly Gates Press 1 and then 2 also, that's a big part of it, is that of mapping the landscape so that when you're about to enter that territory, you'll have a guide. You know, it won't be the same, but you'll maybe be able to recognize things better and have the ability to be at peace with your own transformation because you know somebody else has done it and somebody else is saying, yes, it's possible. Yes, this is happening. Yes, you can do it too. It's
absolutely
easy as can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got the first volume. I got to get my hands on the second one, and it's great. I love to, you know, have it on paper and being able to bring it out whenever I can and, you know, don't have to pop on my computer just to read some of your wonderful writing. So it's great to have it, you know.
Yeah.
And you got some, is that available through your website?
Oh, yeah. All you have to do is go to creativecosmos.org. All the way down the front page is an advertisement for Volume 1, just a little picture there. It's clear as a bell. And then over on the right side, I also have a link for Volume 2. And, yeah, even those Secrets of the Galaxy, I'm sure, will be in Volume 3. So those of you enjoying the articles that are coming through right now, that will be part of Pearly Gates Press Volume 3. So in the months ahead, keep an eye out for that.
Great, great. Okay, we're just about out of time here, Chris. So,
all right,
again,
thanks
like
for
to,
having me, man.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show.
Great time.
And yeah, we'll hang on, okay? And I'll say goodbye to all my listeners and tune in next week as we continue the ride through all that is happening here on Red Ice Radio. And make sure to visit my website, of course, which is www.red-ice.net. That's red-ice.net. Okay, thanks for joining. My name is Henrik Songbien, and we will talk next week. Bye-bye, everyone.